And the court will proceed to the third case, the United States versus Carrillo et al. Ms. Siegler.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Allison Siegler from the Federal Defender Program, and I represent Maria Miranda. In this case, it was error to give the ostrich instruction because there was no evidence that Maria Miranda strongly suspected that there were drugs in the black Cadillac when she drove it, and there was no evidence that she then consciously and deliberately avoided knowledge of those drugs. As the court is fully aware, the ostrich instruction is not proper in every case. Instead, there are two requirements which must be met for the ostrich instruction to be given. First, there must be evidence that this particular defendant had a strong suspicion that something illegal was afoot. And secondly, there must be evidence that in the face of that strong suspicion, this defendant then consciously and deliberately avoided knowing fully what was going on. The standard is not a negligence standard, and that's extremely important here. The standard is not, as this court said in Giovanetti, whether a reasonable person in this defendant's shoes would have suspected that something illegal was going on and would have investigated further. The standard is not whether somebody failed to display curiosity. And this is important because if the instruction is improperly given in the face of no evidence of conscious avoidance of knowledge, we have a serious danger that an innocent dupe will be convicted based simply upon the fact that she should have known that there was illegality involved. Your Honors, in this case, there was no evidence that Maria Miranda had a strong suspicion of those drugs. This lack of suspicion makes perfect sense in this context. Ms. Miranda is a young, 22-year-old, attractive woman. She is used to older men going to bars with her and going to parties with her, used to men paying her way. It's clear from the record that there's been no involvement on her part with drugs in the past. So someone like this is not cutting off her normal curiosity when she accepts a free trip to a party and accepts a free car.
I don't understand the party business. So she's invited to a party in Mexico where Carrillo's wife is going to be there? Well, what's that about? I don't get it.
The evidence in the case, Your Honor, was that Carrillo had a crush on Ms. Miranda. Ms. Miranda was somewhat seeing Oscar Diaz, who is an associate of Carrillo's. And Carrillo wanted her at the party but didn't want it to appear that he was with her, so said, come as Diaz's date, come with Diaz, come to this party with me. That's what the evidence...
And you fly someone to Mexico, and I don't know. I think all the government is suggesting here is that odd that she didn't realize that she was engaged in illegal activity. That's purpose of the ostrich instruction.
But, Your Honor, in every drug case in which this court has upheld that instruction, there are a number of red flags which suggest to the defendant, strongly suggest, that there's illegal activity afoot. And these are red flags that the defendant then purposefully and deliberately avoids investigating. These are things we don't have here. For example, a situation where the drug packaging is either clearly visible or somewhat visible. A number of this court's cases have had that situation. Also where, as in the Carrillo case, where the defendant knows there's a trap compartment in the car and yet drives the car anyway.
She receives money, if you believe Diaz. She receives $5,000. She gets a Cadillac. She's asked to drive it from Mexico. Seems very strange. There's a lot of strange things. So they're innocent explanations, but isn't the jury just being told, well, you know, a lot of strange things that she was aware of, extremely strange. So maybe, you know, she shut her eyes to the obvious, didn't inquire what was going on, hoped for the best.
Your Honor, with regard, if I could respond to the money situation, it's our position, and frankly it's the government's position as well, that whether she received money goes to actual knowledge. It doesn't go to conscious avoidance of knowledge because the money...
Oh, sure it does. You get someone says, you know, would you carry my package through airline security for $5,000? Of course you are on notice that you're probably involved in an illegal transaction.
But, Your Honor, my point is that in this case, the evidence of the money is she was... is that Diaz says, Diaz's testimony is actual knowledge. Diaz testified she was
told
there
was a drug.
Look, it doesn't
matter.
She was paid for the drugs.
Yes, but look, suppose Carrillo testified she got $5,000 and she knew about the drug. Suppose she testified she got $5,000 and didn't know about the drugs. And then you could say, well, maybe so, but on the other hand, she must have known there was something illegal involved.
But, Your Honor, she didn't testify she got $5,000. Her testimony is actual
innocence. No, I understand she didn't.
The
jury might
no
think,
money.
Well, she got the $5,000, but Diaz is unreliable. We don't believe he actually told her it was for drugs.
Your Honor, I think it's very significant that the government, both in its closing and in its brief, specifically considers that receipt of money to be evidence of actual knowledge, not evidence of conscious avoidance of knowledge.
Could be both, couldn't it?
Your Honor, it seems to us that that falls into the category of actual knowledge.
Couldn't the same evidence be evidence both of actual knowledge and of ostrich-like behavior?
Only if there are a number of additional red flags. The only time this Court has found that, I believe, is when there's red flags, other things that should lead the defendant to suspect, or even evidence that the defendant admits, I was suspicious, as in Rodriguez. Or evidence the defendant admits, oh, I knew this guy had been dealing drugs before, as in Wilson. There's always a number of things going on that are directly related to illegality. We don't have that here. We have the party. We have her being somebody who's young and likes to go to parties, and that's evidence in the record beyond just her testimony. It comes from Diaz also. We have this person who, it's not that unusual for people to give her
things. The car is supposed to be a present to her, but when she gets back to Chicago, they take it away from her. So wouldn't she wonder what was going on here? Was this really a present?
When she gets back to Chicago, her testimony is not that they take it away from her. Her testimony is...
Yes, I know, but jury could find they took the car away from her. They took it away and sold it.
At that point, Your Honor, I think what's important is what's going through her mind as she crosses the border, first of all. I think this is very much time-specific situation where we have to look at the time she crosses the border with that car, does she have a strong suspicion, which she then consciously avoids following through on? And whether or not whatever happens after she gets back does not go to whether she had a strong suspicion at the time that the allegedly illegal activity occurred.
Want to reserve some time?
Oh, yes, thank you very much. We would ask the court to reverse and remand this case for a new trial based on the fact that the ostrich instruction was erroneously given.
Thank you, Ms. Siegler. Mr. Misek?
Thank you. May it please the Honorable Court, good morning. I'm Ralph Metchik, and I represent the appellant, Pedro Herrera. I would respectfully submit to the court that Mr. Herrera never joined the conspiracy at all involved in this case, that this was simply an ad hoc buyer-seller relationship with the others involved in this case. I think the criterion is in the Seventh Circuit, and the authority in the Seventh Circuit, is there has been no protracted course of illicit sales between Mr. Herrera and the other co-conspirators that were charged in the case, or the alleged co-conspirators charged in the case. I should call them co-defendants. First of all, the seller had no knowledge of the buyer's illegal venture, and it also showed that there was no stake in the buyer's illegal venture. And there had been no proof at all that Diaz had ever sold, Mr. Diaz, the other co-defendant in the case, had ever sold drugs to Mr. Herrera. I would respectfully submit to you that this was a classic buyer-seller relationship. It's not as though Herrera had bought the entire output of the drugs that the other co-defendants generated. It was, as I said, an ad hoc, one-time-only relationship. Yes, he was desirous. As a matter of fact, he coveted the drugs, and that gets to the next issue in the case, and that is whether or not there was, in fact, an attempted possession on the part of Mr. Herrera. And again, I would respectfully submit that Mr. Herrera did not take a substantial step in trying to acquire the drugs. It was still in the talk stage or the negotiation stage. The question really is whether defendants act past the preparation stage, and so if it had not been interrupted, would it have resulted in a crime? And again, I would respectfully submit that here law enforcement stepped in and really truncated the discussion stage. There was nothing really beyond the discussion stage. It's true that Herrera was, in fact, arrested with a substantial amount of money, but that was money that he would have spent with anyone who was ready to sell him those drugs. So it wasn't necessarily Mr. Diaz and the others. They had provided, they were still talking about it. They never got past the discussion stage. They met on July 11, 2000.
Wasn't Herrera on the lease of the safe house?
I'm sorry, Judge Posner?
Wasn't Herrera on the lease of the safe house?
Yes, he was.
Well, that's not normal. Normal, you know, buyer behavior, seller behavior, right?
But he may have done so in preparation to acquire drugs and store them there. It didn't matter who the source of the drugs really were. I thought that wouldn't really be irrelevant. As far as Herrera is concerned, he had a lease to store the drugs no matter from what source he obtained the drugs from. His only concern, all he ever wanted was to obtain the drugs, and it didn't matter from which.
But he rented the safe house with Carrillo.
In anticipation, but it never got any further than that. He never actually received the drugs. They never could agree upon a price. Your Honor, for all those reasons, if there are any further questions, I would respectfully ask that the court reverse the trial court. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Grace?
Good morning, Your Honors. This is exactly the basis of our severance motion, essentially what we heard today from Mr. Metrick on behalf of Mr. Herrera. The government claimed that Herrera was going to purchase drugs from Carrillo and the confidential informant, Mr. Diaz. They put forth a lot of evidence of pre-negotiations of what was going on. And then they had this big deal that was supposed to be set up where Herrera was to show up with $150,000 in cash, and Carrillo and Diaz, the CI, were to then make the drug transaction. What happened was the DEA was present. They had Palatine's Finest there, and somehow they got tipped off. And the argument, and everybody scattered. So the argument put forth by Mr. Herrera throughout the entire trial was essentially what we just heard from Mr. Metchik. There may have been a deal. We don't know the amount. We don't know exactly what the price is going to be, but there could have possibly have been some type of deal, but we couldn't go through. You can't find my client guilty of attempt possession or any type of conspiracy. And then the defendant, Carrillo, on the other hand, said, wait a minute. I wasn't there. I wasn't involved in any type of drug conspiracy. I was not there to purchase drugs. In fact, the evidence showed that Mr. Carrillo was arrested in another state, in Indiana, an hour and a half, 2 hours later. Your Honor, the problem with trying the cases together and requiring Mr. Carrillo to be with Mr. Herrera in the same trial was the defenses were so antagonistic. Constantly throughout the trial, the defense, as a trial counsel, we were required to not only rebut the government's evidence, but also to rebut what Herrera was putting forth towards us. The government was leading the horse to water, and Mr. Herrera's defense was showing him where the lake was. These two defenses could not possibly allow the jury to come through with a non-prejudicial verdict, and that's why we request that the case be remanded for other reasons in the brief also, but be remanded for a new trial separately from on behalf of Mr. Carrillo. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grace. Mr. Drury.
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, all the arguments made by defendants as to why their conviction should be reversed lack merit. Turning first to the argument regarding the government's conspiracy evidence as to Herrera and Carrillo. Based on viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the government, a rational trier of fact certainly could have found that both Carrillo and Herrera knew of and participated in that conspiracy. As to Carrillo, the evidence clearly established that he was the leader and organizer of an international drug trafficking organization that imported drugs from Mexico into the United States, and that he recruited others to work in that organization. As to Herrera, the evidence was clear that he was a member of that drug trafficking organization, and the government's evidence in support of that included documentary evidence, including the lease that was mentioned during the appellant's argument, surveillance, undercover recordings, and witness testimony. While Herrera argues that this was nothing more than a buyer-seller relationship, the fact in making that argument, he improperly views the evidence in the light most favorable to him. Turning to Herrera's argument regarding the attempt, it was not plain error for the jury to convict Herrera of the attempt charge. The government's evidence clearly established that Herrera acted with the intent to possess, with the intent to distribute, and that he took a substantial step towards the completion of that offense. In fact, he took substantial steps. The government's evidence established that he negotiated the purchase price of 50 kilograms of cocaine on July 11, 2002, and the next day he shows up to the prearranged meeting place with $150,000 cash to purchase that cocaine. It certainly was not a manifest miscarriage of justice for him to be convicted of the attempt charge. Regarding the severance claim, Your Honors, the district court did not err in denying Carrillo's severance motion. As an initial matter, Carrillo has waived that argument because he failed to re-raise the motion at the close of evidence. As such, this court does not even need to address the issue. But if it does address the issue, it should address it for plain error, and it was not plain error to deny the motion. Contrary to Herrera's arguments, these defenses were not mutually antagonistic, and even if they were, Carrillo has failed to show that he suffered any actual prejudice. And any actual prejudice that he may have suffered certainly was cured by the district court's limited instruction during the jury charge to consider all the defendants separately. And the jury did that, as evidenced by the fact that two of the defendants were acquitted on one count. Turning to Miranda's ostrich instruction argument, the district court did not abuse its discretion in issuing that instruction. To the extent that Maria Miranda did not have actual knowledge, which I'll get to in a second, the only reason she did not have actual knowledge is because she deliberately avoided obtaining it. A reasonable person in Miranda's, based on the facts and circumstances of that trip to Mexico, a reasonable person in Miranda's shoes would have strongly suspected that she was involved in shady dealings. Moreover, the facts and circumstances surrounding her trip to Mexico support the inference of deliberate indifference.
Was that a single trip to Mexico?
It was one trip to Mexico, Your Honor, in February of 2002. But the facts surrounding that trip, as were discussed during the appellant's argument, the numerous facts that raised issues regarding the trip about why she was down there, why she was given a car, why she drove back separately from her boyfriend, why the car was taken away from her, and why she received $5,000 for that trip. And most importantly, why she...
What about Ms. Siegler's point that anything that happened after she came back to the United States was not relevant because by then the crime had been committed?
Your Honor, I know Ms. Siegler said that the government concedes that point, but the government does not concede that point. The fact is that all the circumstances and all the evidence, the jury could have looked at that either way, as deliberate indifference or as actual knowledge.
But deliberate indifference has to be before the crime is committed, right? What suppose 10 years later she she learned that there had been drugs in the car. You couldn't prosecute her for that.
That may be true, Your Honor, but here getting paid the money.
True. Wow.
Well, I guess statutes would avoid the prosecution of that.
No, I don't think it's a statute of limitations issue. I think if you discover that you were innocently involved in illegal activity, that's not a crime, that discovery.
But here the facts aren't that she discovered when she got back to Chicago that she was somehow duped. It's a continuation from the trip to Mexico through Chicago. But even if we just look to the actual trip to Mexico, there were enough red flags, as Ms. Siegler used the phrase, to raise this a strong suspicion that she was involved in shady dealings.
Ms. Drury, Judge Corr reserved on giving the instruction till after the government's cross, as I understand. What came out in the cross that would justify the granting of the instruction? I'm assuming he granted the government's motion to give the instruction. So what is it that you could point to in that the government elicited in that cross, which would be the tipping point for his discretion to grant the motion to give the instruction?
Your Honor, I think the reason Judge Kaur wanted to wait till after the cross was because when the government first raised the issue, the government was saying we're going to ask for the ostrich instruction. And Judge Kaur, I think, was being cautious and just wanted to see what happened. During the cross-examination, all these red flags were raised, all these oddities about the trip to Mexico. Ms. Miranda on direct said she wanted to go to Mexico, she wanted to drive to Mexico so she can learn how to drive there to pick up her daughter. On cross, it was brought out, you didn't actually drive to Mexico, did you? You flew to Mexico. On direct, Ms. Miranda stated, I was supposed to go to a party and I was going
to
go.
She actually flew to Odessa, Texas, didn't
you? Odessa, Texas, and then she was picked up and brought to Mexico, I believe by Diaz, drove her across the border, or it may have been Carrillo, Your Honor. She was supposed to go to a party. On cross-examination, that was explored, and it was learned that she never went to a party. She was never even picked up. She was stranded at her hotel. So they fly her down to Mexico to take her to a party, buy her a plane ticket to get down there, and then they don't even knock on her door to take her to the party.
Yeah, but I think Ms. Siegler is right that all of these are circumstances which show she's a liar and she knew what was going on. But the ostrich instruction is intended for a situation where the person being suspicious and not wanting to have the actual knowledge does something. So the example we gave in Giovanetti was, or maybe it was actually the facts of Giovanetti, you know you've rented a house and it's being used for gambling. I think that was the case. And so since you suspect that, you don't want to know, so when you drive, you always make sure you don't go by the house. You know, so you're actually engaged in conduct to avoid knowledge, rather than being negligent, reckless, or ignoring red flags. But here, what did she actually do in order to, you know, keep her eyes closed?
Assuming that she didn't have actual knowledge, Your Honor, what she did here was she did not delve further into her strong suspicion out of fear of what she may have learned.
She didn't what? She did what?
She did not delve further or ask any questions.
Delve? No, but there's no duty to delve. See, in the Giovanetti case, you do something to make sure your eyes are still closed. You know, you put a sealer in your eyes. What did she do besides just not delving? What did she do actively that you could say, well, she did that because she didn't want to discover the truth? Not she didn't ask something, but she did something to prevent her from discovering the truth.
Your Honor, everything she did here, just driving that car back.
Driving the car back is not preventing, right? It's not preventing. What if someone said to her, look in the drive shaft and you'll see drugs? And she'd say, no, I'm not going to look in the drive shaft. That would be, you know, affirmatively avoiding acquisition of knowledge. But just not making inquiry, see, that's not a standard ostrich situation.
Well, Your Honor, in some of the cases that we cited in our brief, this court has held that if you did not delving further out of fear of what you may learn could justify the ostrich instruction. And that's exactly what she did here. She didn't want to learn what was going on. And so she specifically chose not to ask any questions about all of these oddities. Even if the ostrich instruction was improperly issued in this case, Your Honors, it's important to know that the error was harmless because the evidence clearly established that she had actual knowledge.
Was she still involved in a personal relationship with Diaz at the time that she went to Texas and then to Mexico?
Your Honor, I don't know that the record was absolutely clear. I believe she was because the way the evidence came out during Diaz's direct was that she knew that her boyfriend Diaz was a drug dealer, and she asked Diaz if she can get involved in the drug trade, and she specifically asked if she could make a drug trip in return for money. Diaz then went to Carrillo and asked him, could we use Miranda? Carrillo said yes, and they set up this trip. And she goes down to Mexico, and then she gets paid $5,000 for that.
Well, wasn't there testimony that she became involved with another woman about that time?
Your Honor, I think she started becoming involved with Luz Gomez a little bit later on.
I'm reading here, it said February 2002, and that's the month that she flew down to Texas.
If that's what the record shows, that may be true, but my understanding was she started getting involved with Luz Gomez, and I don't know that they were mutually exclusive. My understanding was it was a little bit later because of the way the circumstances, the testimony of Diaz was that they were going out, and she asked him that. And while Miranda's counsel asked this court to ignore Diaz's testimony that he wasn't credible, that's asking this court to view the evidence in the light most favorable to Ms. Miranda, not in the light most favorable to the government, as it should. Your Honors, the government respectfully see no further questions. The government respectfully requests that this court affirm the convictions of all the defendants, affirm the sentence of Maria Miranda, and with respect to the sentences of Carrillo and Herrera, that pursuant to this court's decision in United States versus Palladino, order a limited remand to determine whether application of the advisory guidelines would have affected the sentence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Drury. Ms. Siegler.
I want to pick up on Judge Posner's point here, the issue of, first of all, the fact that there were none of these red flags, and without the drugs are in a container, everyone agrees, that underneath the car, absolutely, completely hidden. Ms. Miranda's not present for the loading of the drugs into the container. Ms. Miranda's not present for the container being put on the car. Ms. Miranda makes no statement saying that she's suspicious. There's none of that here. Without that, Ms. Miranda does not just have an obligation to ask questions. If you don't suspect, the only time there's an obligation to ask questions is when you have a strong suspicion. So, for example, this court held in Ramsey that it takes a fairly large amount of knowledge to prompt further investigation for the purpose of this instruction. And similarly, on the Giovannetti point, Your Honor, it's exactly the same situation. In Giovannetti, the defendant does not go out of his way to make sure that the home he's renting out is not being used as a gambling den. Instead, he drives his ordinary route, and he never discovers that the home is being used as a gambling den. Because he doesn't have the initial strong suspicion, he's not actively avoiding knowledge there. You have to have the strong suspicion in order to be required to investigate further. I also want to pick up, I think it's very important that the government says the standard is a reasonable person in Ms. Miranda's shoes would have suspected. That is not this court's standard. Giovannetti explicitly says the opposite, that is not the standard. And in any case that uses that standard, there are facts and circumstances which show suspicion in the first place that aren't here. I also would like to point out with regard to the government's point that this error is harmless. The government proceeded on two theories, actual knowledge and active avoidance of knowledge. Without the ostrich instruction, the government would have had to prove that Ms. Miranda had actual knowledge. And in order to survive harmless error, the government has to show, beyond a reasonable doubt, that the jury would not have convicted Ms. Miranda without this instruction. So they have to show that Ms. Miranda would have been convicted simply on actual knowledge. And the only evidence of actual knowledge comes from Oscar Diaz. Oscar Diaz is completely discredited at trial, and Oscar Diaz is the sole person upon whom the government's retaliation case rests, and that case falls. Ms. Miranda is acquitted of that charge. Oscar Diaz has enormous credibility problems. The jury learns that he's lied to the police and the prosecutors everywhere. And so for all these reasons, it cannot be said that without this ostrich instruction, with only Diaz's testimony, Ms. Miranda would have been convicted. I thank the court for its time, and we ask again that the court remand and give Ms. Miranda a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Siegler. Mr. Majek?
Thank you. Just a brief rejoinder to the government's assertion that there was not a substantial step. Let me just quote from the transcript of the cross-examination of Mr. Diaz. Quote, Mr. Diaz, I never agreed with him on any amount. He was just telling me what he will guarantee me. That is Diaz on cross-examination concerning whether or not there has been an agreement. There never was an agreement. And again, I would respectfully remind the court that Mr. Diaz failed to appear on the 12th when the deal was supposed to be consummated. Moreover, I want to quote just very quickly, again, the transcript on cross-examination. He, quote, this is Diaz on cross, he meaning Mr. Herrera. He mentioned 105, 115, and then 150, so I didn't know exactly how much money was going to be there until I actually go to the house. Another quote, when asked at trial whether $200,000 would cover the full price of the 25 kilograms, Diaz answers, quote, depends on the price that you're going to sell it for. It was going to be It depends on the price we're going to sell for. At least $200,000 before I can do this. Diaz then stated it was going to be around 50 kilos. Again, equivocation and never an agreement, never a meeting of the minds. Again, thank you very much, and I respectfully ask that you reverse and remand. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Maciej. Mr. Grace?
Your Honor, I would just like to address the issue with respect to whether or not Carrillo has waived his right to request an appeal based upon a severance. It was fully briefed. Oral arguments were held before Judge Kaur. Was denied. During the trial, defense moved for a severance for a second time. Was denied. During closing arguments, the attorney for Herrera starts pointing the finger at Mr. Carrillo. Then the attorney for Herrera states something along the lines of, I can't cross-examine him. At that point, the entire courtroom jumped up. Judge Kaur immediately called the sidebar before anybody could object, and we went back, and we talked about this. And the government's attorney said we were talking about whether or not he is pointing the finger at Mr. Herrera has impinged his right to not take the stand. I objected at that point, stating that I believe that my exact words were, I think he's deprived my client of a fair trial. I would submit to the court that this is a continuation of the argument that the case should have been severed. And more importantly, the assistant U.S. attorney states, I think that's one of the risks of a joint trial, that he says Carrillo the big bad guy because he isn't my guy. Our conversation was, the objections were there, that severance should have been granted. And I would submit that it has not been waived. Thank you, Your Honor. I'd also ask for a reverse remand.
Thank you, Mr. Grace. Our thanks to all counsel, and a special thanks to appointed counsel for ably representing their clients in this case. The case is taken under advisement.